I've recently started watching a TV show called The Good Place. It's a comedy that's on Netflix, an American show, about a woman called Eleanor Shellstrop, who wakes up in the afterlife, only to discover that she is in The Good Place. And The Good Place is a heaven-like utopia that's a reward for the good life that she has lived. The only trouble is, there has been an administrative mistake, and Eleanor should really have gone to the other place. Now, initially, the series is all about her trying to hide her past and the fact that she was a fairly unethical human being. Then the second part of the series is all about her learning how to be a good person so that she can retrospectively earn her space in the good place, or at the very least, try and justify her existence there. It's a very funny show. It's very original. There are quotes from great moral philosophers. What more can you ask for? Something that makes you laugh, a quote from Kant, and something that makes you think. Brilliant. I highly recommend it. And like that TV show, today's reading from Matthew's Gospel is also devised to make you think. It may not make you laugh like The Good Place does, but it does suggest that the way that we live might have significant, maybe even eternal consequences. It's worth saying at the start that this is quite an interesting excerpt from Matthew's Gospel. If you sort of analyse it as a piece of literature, it's not a parable. Many of us are familiar with parables, nor is it ethical teaching like something like the Sermon on the Mount. It could be an apocalyptic story describing what will happen at the end of time, but we don't quite know. I'm not entirely sure, and so I'm quite wary of pinning it down too absolutely. So what I'm offering you today is my interpretation of this story as I've read and reflected on it and the whole of Matthew's Gospel over the past couple of weeks. And for me, I think we need to read it as being aimed at the original hearers. And Jesus' original hearers were, of course, his fellow first century Jews. Whether that's right or not, whether I've got that interpretation right, who knows? But for me, it's meant to be a story that makes you sit up and take notice. And I think it does do that. And at the heart of the story is a king. In fact, he's called the king. And we're given this picture of him exercising judgment over the people of every nation. Now, many of us, I suspect, will feel rather cautious or suspicious of that image of God as judge, because we're aware that judgment and of judging people can be bound up with an abuse of power. We know that if a judge proclaims that this sort of behaviour is wrong, that that can mean that this group of people over here are in some way oppressed. And in our culture, we value freedom of speech, we value freedom of self-expression. And so at times, judgment can feel contrary to those ideals. We feel other people shouldn't have a right to dictate how we live. And yet at the same time, many of us long for judgment. Just this week, the world has been watching the events in Zimbabwe. Many people have been hoping and perhaps praying that Robert Mugabe would finally be held to account for his behaviour and that he would be forced to go. And of course, he has been. We also heard on the news this week that the former Bosnian Serb commander, Ratko Mladic, the man who was nicknamed the Butcher of Bosnia, he was jailed for life after being judged and after being found guilty of some of the most atrocious war crimes. On the one hand, we don't want judgment, and yet on the other hand, we really do want judgment. In the Bible, the idea of judgment is closely aligned with justice. Sometimes I like to substitute the two words to help me try and get a sense of what's being said. And judgment's associated with putting right all that is wrong in this world. And the context of this particular story we've heard from Matthew is that over the last couple of chapters, Jesus has been challenging again and again his fellow Jews, and he has been holding them to account. The Jews in the narrative of the Bible, the Jews were God's chosen people. That made them a privileged people. But along with those privileges came responsibilities. And time and again, Jesus has challenged them and pointed out that some, not all, but some of them have neglected those responsibilities. They were meant to live in a way that reflected the character of God, and they'd failed to do that, so they hadn't fulfilled their vocation. So I think this passage is in the same vein as those other ones and is primarily directed at that first century Jewish community. So in the story, we're told that the king divides the nations as a shepherd divides the sheep and goats. I've spent a long time this week Googling, why would you divide sheep and goats? Oh, to see my search history, it's fantastic. But from what I have read, from what I can glean about shepherds and grazing animals in that part of the world, when the animals were out in the field, the sheep and goats, the type that they had, looked almost indistinguishable. So you looked at them, it looked like they were all the same. But at night, as far as I understand it, the goats were less able to keep warm, so the shepherd would divide them up to make sure both sets of animals were correctly cared for at night. And so what this seems to be saying is that this is a story saying, on the surface, we've got a group of people who all look the same. They all appear to be the same, but on closer inspection, we have two different categories. Let me just take you back to where we started and to the good place. I think there is a common misconception that if you want to end up in heaven, that you have to be good in order to earn a place for yourself. It's a common misconception because time and time again in the Bible, it says the opposite. It actually says you can't earn a place in heaven because it's a gift that comes through Jesus. And when it comes to this story, people assume that the sheep, they're the ones who sort of come out looking good in all of this, that the sheep are doing good things in order to earn themselves a place in heaven. But listen carefully to what they say to the king. They say, but Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? It seems to be saying that they didn't realize that their actions counted, but they did them anyway. They didn't realize that their actions carried some sort of significance before God, but they still did them. Conversely, the goats ask the same question, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty and did not help you? And the suggestion seems to be that, you know, hang on a minute, if we'd known that these actions counted in some way, if we knew they were for you, God, we'd have done them. So the sheep aren't trying to earn a place in heaven. They are choosing to do what's right, even when nobody is looking or counting. The Jewish people had been set apart by God to bless others. That's part of the story that's in the Old Testament. It wasn't just about caring for their own needs. They had this particular vocation to be a blessing to others. So one group of people are fulfilling that purpose and the other group are not. It's not about being good or bad in this story. I think that's a way oversimplistic reading. It's not about being Jewish or not being Jewish. It's about whether or not you are embodying a way of life that reflects something of the character of God. The first century Jews believed that there would be a final judgment at the end of time. At that judgment, the nations of the world would be judged on how they had treated the people of Israel. But what Jesus seems to be doing here is he's flipping it round and he's actually saying, do you know what, Israel, my people, you don't have a privileged status because actually you will be judged for the way that you have treated others. So he's holding them to account. And for me, the key question that is the heart of this story is this. Have God's people lived God's way? Have God's people lived God's way? I think what makes it such a compelling story is that it hints that there have been people who haven't been part of God's family and yet who have still lived God's way. People who weren't part of the Jewish nation and yet they fed the hungry, they clothed the naked, they welcomed the stranger and visited those in prison. I love the way this story muddies the waters, muddies the distinctions, and just makes you wonder, hang on a minute here, who are the people that we're meant to be celebrating? So that's what the story means or might mean. But what does it mean for us? What are we meant to do with it, reading it today? Well, I think it is a story that was spoken to a particular group of people at a particular time, but it can also speak into our time. And it confronts us with the same question. Are God's people living God's way? If you count yourself in that, are we living God's way? It's not a question that's particularly about the past or about the future. It's a challenge and it is a reminder that life in the present matters. Because being a Christian isn't just about coming to church on Sundays and then feeling confident that one day I've got a place secured for me in heaven. Being a Christian is about who we are and what we do with every moment of our lives here and now. It is about the present. You've heard this morning that we're in the process of launching this new food bank project in partnership with a local charity. We're not doing that to impress God. In fact, we're not even doing it to impress other people. We are doing it because we have a genuine, deeply held sense that this is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. That being a follower of Jesus is about feeding the hungry and welcoming the stranger, because that's what God does. And if that's what God does, then that's what we will try our hardest to do with the help of God. Last year, an organization called the Cinnamon Trust did an audit of projects being run by local churches, projects like this food bank. They found that churches across the UK were running almost 23,000 projects, and that volunteers were giving 30 million hours of time per year. The total financial value placed upon that voluntary work was £3.4 billion per year. That's extraordinary. The story of the sheep and goats isn't meant to strike fear into our hearts. It's meant to make us stop and think, and perhaps more importantly, it's meant to make us act, to do something. And when I say do something, I don't mean just search up the best Black Friday deal that's still live until tomorrow. It's meant to make us think about what really matters. In that TV show, The Good Place, the main character, Eleanor Shellstrop, finds herself asking the question, you know, what am I doing here? And for me, this story provokes us to ask the same question, but it's saying don't wait till the afterlife to think about what you're living for or what you lived for, but ask that question now. What am I doing here? What's all this for? What am I doing here? I encourage you to think about that story, think about the food bank project, think about what really matters. Amen.